resistance, and there will be repression by the Israelis. Of course, this is very bad. It makes life difficult for everybody, including players and football and the fans. But in our report, we tried not to talk about the political situation. We tried to concentrate on what is happening to football as a sport, what is happening to players as players, our inability to build stadia, our inability to get equipment, our inability to move back and forth, our inability to just conduct the actions of the football team. Of course, if they solve all these problems, it becomes easier, but we're still under occupation. We still want freedom. But this is a political matter. Now we are talking about football, and we are talking about sports.
At a time like this, with the World Cup going on in Brazil, many people tend to go out in the streets celebrating wins when the team that they're in favor of wins games and wins the World Cup. Is that something that's happening, or are people pretty much staying inside because of the ongoing Israeli invasions?
Well, it depends in certain areas. If there are Israeli soldiers, they don't want anybody outside, so people have to be inside. In other towns, if there are no soldiers, people are out in the streets. They have big giant screens where they watch the football and where everybody celebrates. Mostly in the southern areas around Hebron and those areas, there are too many soldiers and everybody has to go inside and lock themselves, otherwise the soldiers may attack them. So in some areas, it is not possible to have a normal football season. In other places, people love to. People are creative. You know, I come from Bethlehem, and near Bethlehem, there is a wall, the wall that the Israelis built around Bethlehem. Some very smart guy, he painted a part of the wall in white, and they show the football game on the big screen on the wall. So people gather around the wall to watch the game. People are creative. People have life. Palestinians want to live and they want to be free, and they always find a way to enjoy football and to enjoy life.
And if people are interested in finding your report on how Israel hinders football, or as we know it here in the U.S., soccer in occupied Palestine, where can they look for that report?
They can look for that report on Nonviolence International, because the report talks about nonviolence. So it's Nonviolence International. And then you can click on the publications, and there will be the report itself. You can click on it and download the whole report with pictures and numbers and documentation. And as I said, in 2 or 3 days, it will be possible on that same site to find the Spanish report.
Well, thanks so much again. I've been speaking with Jonathan Kutab. He is the co-author of a new report on how Israel hinders football in occupied Palestine, coming out just as the World Cup is taking place in Brazil. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jonathan Kutab.
Thank you very much, and let's enjoy football.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Bye.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Welcome to Out Loud, folks, your queer news and culture show right here on KBOO.FM online, KBOO 90.7 on the radio. Thanks for tuning in. Today I've got Jason T. Ingram with us today. Jason is a Portland native who spent the last 6 years traveling the U.S. He's been raising awareness on the dangers of what you might call the ex-gay movement. Jason is putting together a counter event called 12 Years of Fundy. 12 Years of Fundy. This is a multimedia presentation including stories, video, art, live music, discussion, and a potluck. Jason was subjected to years of anti-gay therapy and was even sent to a, quote, straight camp. And he'll be sharing his experiences as well as shedding light on the ex-gay movement. Thank you, Jason, for being here.
Well, thank you, Alan, and thank you, KBOO listeners. I want to start by giving KBOO a big thanks. KBOO was one of the reasons why I do the music that I do today. The late Richard Francis, who had his show on Thursday nights, when I was 12 years old, browsing through stations, I heard experimental noise and thought, wow, this is actually music. And it got me excited. They played everything from Frank Zappa to progressive rock, and I was ruined. Ended up going to music school, PCC Cascade program, back in 92. And I was on this station a couple of times, even at the age of 17, sitting here with Barbara Bernstein. She didn't realize that at the time. She goes, yes, I have Jason Ingram in my studio. He's a young composer, and I just found out he's 17. And then I did it a year later when I had a band, and we did avant-garde free jazz. So I was in the other room playing on the piano and making various noises with different things. So, yay, this is so cool being here today. And especially that this is probably the biggest opportunity that I've had to share about my events coming up in a couple weeks here. As you know, I spent 12 years in fundamentalist circles. It was a choice for me. It was a good thing for a while. It was a powerful conversion experience. And then the last 5 years of those 12 were just me trying to be a straight person. I felt like that's what I had to do in order to be this type of Christian and to have this type of career. Ended up in Anchorage, Alaska most of the time, finding men's sexual addiction groups. They put me in the same category as all kinds of very harmful sexual addictive behaviors. So that just increased my shame, and there was a lot of abuse. Their tactics were similar to those that people would use in jail. And I realized that this didn't work, and I didn't see any way out but suicide or shipping myself out to go to a straight camp in Kentucky. And I spent a year there and came out 8 years ago. And I want to say this disclaimer here is that I don't really travel the U.S. for 6 years. I've really only done this in five or six different states. I do it about once a year on average. I'm not really that open about my health issues, but I can tell you that traveling and doing any kind of stressful thing is very intense for me. I've been on disability for 5 years now, and by the grace of God, I'm still going, and I'm doing this after having put it down many times. I realized that Restored Hope was doing their national conference here. I found that out late summer, and I got a lot of mixed reactions, but not a lot of helpers. So at the last minute, people have been coming on board, mostly the straight community. Woohoo! So thanks, all you heteros that I love so much. So anyways, I would like to say that we might have some time to take some calls. So Alan, if you want to let people know.
Sure. The phone number here is 231-8187. So please do call in. Jason, you mentioned Restored Hope.
Mm-hmm. Those of you might be familiar with Exodus International. They were, for decades, the global center for this so-called ex-gay movement. They were an umbrella organization for several groups. Some of them I received, ministry from, you can call it that. And they, Alan Chambers, the director of that, listened to some of these survivors from these programs and really just discovered that it doesn't work. He still doesn't think that being gay is okay, but he doesn't think that these programs can change them. So he's still kind of on the fence. Like Ted Haggard, he kind of changes his mind sometimes about what he is, gay or straight, or he's probably just bi, like a lot of us are. That's one of the things I talk about a lot. And so Exodus International quit. Last year, the Restored Hope Network had started as an ultra-conservative style ministry that was basically doing the same thing. They have more tactics. They also wanted to be more secretive, apparently. You just can't find their headquarters. They finally revealed where they were based. They're based in Milwaukee, Oregon. And I found that out. It was like, okay, wow, I live in Milwaukee, Oregon. And then their national conference is located here in Happy Valley. So I'll have more information about that. If anybody wants to go across the street and wave and say, we love you, you're not welcome here, you're doing it's harmful, but, you know, just a nice, peaceful presence in Portland. So why don't we start with a little bit more background about the ex-gay movement. I have an opinion here, and I have not shared this publicly yet, so here it is. I believe that the ex-gay movement is worse than the Westboro Baptist people with the sign that says God hates fags and all that kind of stuff. For one thing, Westboro Baptist is, frankly, they're entertaining. They actually just disqualify themselves just because they're so dumb. And so people don't take them seriously. They hurt a lot of people's feelings, especially picketing, you know, funerals and stuff. I mean, just poor taste. Now, the thing about the ex-gay movement is that the ex-gays, and I say this in quotes as much as I can because I don't believe that ex-gays exist, they believe they're trying to help. As opposed to those who want to make life worse for LGBTs, like the people that are railing against gay marriage. They say, well, you know, gays aren't going to change. Let's make life hard for them, and maybe they'll just, you know, give up or disappear or whatever. Of course, that's a very uncompassionate thing to do, to say if they don't like a culture or a group of people, say, let's just make life hard for them. You know, it's actually more harmful to say, well, let's just change them and make them more like us. I think that that's hard because it's luring people into a false hope. And of course, it's a lot of it has to do with the culture they were in and things like that and their self-esteem and a lot of other things. So they're just preying on a lot of things that people want to hear, that, you know, that they could change their sexual orientation to become like most people are. So they have this compassionate sort of looking approach. Ex-gay leaders look like sympathizers. They don't look like perpetrators. And it's funny when you meet them and you really, you know, get a sense of what a lot of things are motivating them. It's not just money. It's not just power. I mean, some people really do have the right motives, and yet they're the ones that I think are doing the most harm. That's why I think this is a much bigger issue than it is. Now, what people ask me is that, well, you know, I thought that that they no longer can force people into straight camps. They're probably referring to what happened in about 2005, where there was a young man who was pleading to his friends and family around the world on social media, saying, they're forcing me to go into the straight camp, which is Love in Action in the Memphis area. And I've done some protesting around that area as well back in 08. And this was just after this whole thing was going on. Well, it turns out they passed a law. They said, okay, you can't force kids, you know, minors, to go to straight camps in America. So what do they do now? They send them to a different country. And they actually are treating them worse in these straight camps that are in other countries. I don't know much about that, but that's another thing to look into as well. It's easy to find all kinds of things out on the web. Truth Wins Out is a great resource. Beyond X Gay is a good website. I've been featured on there since they started back in 07. And There's a book called X Gay No Way. There's all kinds of good stuff out there for you. So there's something else I wanted to do. As you know, I am into music, so I'm going to play you a song here. This is a song called Identity Thieves. I actually had done my presentations under the name Identity Thieves, and then they came out with a movie with a similar title, so I decided to change it a couple times. This is one I did in my studio here in Portland about 4 years ago, and as you know, although I play in bands, I tend to work by myself. In fact, when I played my music here when I was a teenager, it was all multi-track cassette back in those days. So I say, here's another song I'm going to play and you hear, because of all the tape hiss. So yay for digital music. I know people hate digital, but I love it. So here we go. Here's an excerpt from the song called Identity Thieves.
Waking up from this horrible dream, lucid taking control of things, and I'm speaking now. Oh, I'm speaking out. It wasn't just some sessions, these were religious obsessions. Try to fight, but at the time I believed in how I tried everything, no matter how crazy, working it by day and by night. But now this I see, 'cause it's who I am.
This is Alan. Welcome back to Out Loud. I have Jason T. Ingram here. He is creator of 12 Years of Fundy, a multimedia exhibit and project. It's a response to the ex-gay movement, which Jason spent some time as a subject of. He's producing 12 Years of Fundy here in Portland very soon, partly in response to a national conference being hosted by the Restored Hope Network, which is an ex-gay ministry, do we say that?
That's what they call themselves, yes.
Okay. And we'll talk a little bit more about Restored Hope and their conference and the protest that folks might be able to participate in just a few minutes.
Yeah, I think the reason why this is important is that a lot of it has to do with mental health issues. It's not so much a civil rights issue, although if all these ex-gay ministries finally just gave up, that would contribute to us, you know, getting same-sex marriage through the entire country, because that's one of the things that's undermining our community and doing damage, especially to young people. I didn't grow up in these type of churches. I grew up in the Unitarian Church, a gay-friendly school, a gay-friendly church and community and everything like that. So it's amazing how these things I adapted as an adult were still just as toxic as those that grow up in this kind of stuff. So I really think that it is still a threat. It's more secretive. They're not putting out billboards. They're not putting out press releases, apparently. So I am the whistleblower.
Jason, can I ask you what drew you into fundamentalist religion and practices, churches, as an adult?
Well, there are good people in every community. I was very disillusioned by the community I was in, partly because I had gotten so deep into a lot of problems. I think there's a lot of extremism on the other side when it comes to hanging around a lot of, you know, hippie types and liberal types. Folks might be a little more prone to, and I hate to say this, but, you know, substance abuse and things like that. There's more danger to get into trouble sexually and things like that, you know. But when you're involved in this religious bubble, I can say this protective bubble, and I needed that because I was young and I had an untreated mental illness and I didn't have a lot of common sense and I needed some more parenting, and it was good for several years. I went to Bible school. I did some mission work. I felt like I was really accomplishing things. It was really good up until, you know, I started realizing I was conforming way too much into that, and I started exhibiting more of my eccentric personality. It wasn't necessarily I was gay. I'm just weird. I'm from Portland. The Restored Hope Network was started by a gal named Ann Polk, and you might have heard of Ann and John Polk. They were kind of the poster children 20 years ago for ex-gays who had gotten married. They made the cover of Newsweek a long time ago, and their marriage ended a couple years ago. John, bless his heart, he is wanting to stay out of the public. I'm sure he needs a lot of time to heal, so, you know, do us a favor. Leave him alone for a while until he's ready, or if he feels the calling to, you know, get into any kind of activism, things like that. I love these people. The ex-gay survivor community are the ones who had, you know, found my artwork on the Gay Christian Network and helped me to get involved in activism. And it was Christine Bakke who was the one who first found me. And then I got connected with a man named Peterson Toscano, who will be here in November. And he is my favorite advocate when it comes to ex-gay survivors. And my biggest inspiration, because he does performance art. And it's awesome.
You mentioned earlier that you spent a year in straight camp. What was that?
That was called Pure Life Ministries, and that was in rural Kentucky, and I went through 7 months of that. Basically ruined my job history. It traumatized me incredibly. I was put in very dangerous situations. There's some audio clips that we could play that has to do with that. And this is from, I'd given Alan a link of almost 30 minutes of clips that I've been putting together for a documentary that someday I will make. And maybe we will be on there. So this is excerpts from Confessions of an Ex-Ex-Gay. These are things that I've done around the country, including Portland and Anchorage, Alaska, a couple of years ago. And I do talk about that. So... here, as we are working on finding the right track here, there's a CD that I left, and it's track 2. And that sounded pretty gay, whatever, wasn't it?
That'll be the a song we'll play a little bit later.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Well, anyways, I don't have a protest plan. Actually, I just plan on going there, you know, delivering a gift and an invitation to my event Saturday night. And, you know, I'm not there to cause any trouble. I'm not going to spend more than a minute or so in there because I'm not attending the conference. So I'm not legally able to be in there. I'm not going to break the law unless, you know, I moved to do something like that. But, you know, we can, you know, be across the street. If it gets big, hopefully somebody will organize to get a permit or anything like that. The location is going to be at 9800 Southeast 92nd Avenue in Happy Valley, Oregon. And if you could just look at Beautiful Savior Lutheran Church, then that's the address of where it's going to be. And there's plenty of street space on Otty. O-T-T-Y is the street that's next to it. But I hope nobody parks on the bike trail on 92nd, because then they will be breaking the law. So Okay. So, okay, we got the track ready here. These are some film excerpts here that I've been putting together. I hope you enjoy them.
Just the guy was particularly stubborn. We would sit him in the center of the chapel, and we'd have chairs of everybody in a circle all looking at him, and every single person was... they demanded that we criticize that person. We had to say three things that we thought were wrong with that person. And we were instructed not to compliment at all.
You know, really attracted to who am I really? And the moment I started exploring that is when I started seeking out this so-called ex-gay movement. And it's kind of funny because I wasn't really even doing anything gay. So how could I be ex-gay if I wasn't even? So there was a lot of really outrageous things that had to do with that.
It's not like an Alcoholics Anonymous group. They give their negative feedback whatever they want to. And in fact, I was accused of lying on my application to want to get help somewhere else. And in fact, I didn't lie on my application.
You know, their whole thing was, we're going to get you into a closer relationship with the Father God through Jesus Christ. But when that doesn't work, then we're going to have to do all of these things every day, 24/7. And you're going to have to call somebody every day, and you're going to have to go over this list. And...
'cause it's who I am, who I love, who I am, who I love, who I am, who I love. 'Cause it's who I am, who I love, who I am, who I love, but identity thieves.
There were quite a lot of us. Some would say more than half, some would say less than half of the men that are in the residential program at Pure Life Ministries are there because they were gay or bi.
Okay.
But the thing is that you're not allowed when you're in the program to tell the other students about your past. So we never really...
like magma in the mountain, music and the horn, soda in the can, I'm coming out. Like people out of their houses, old clothes out of a closet, like the bright full moon at twilight, I'm coming out.
Words of hatred, words of fear, words of flattery I long to hear, words of deception, man-made religions, songs of the blindest.
The religious community came out in support more than ever of the gay community. And, you know, we gained a lot of straight allies as well.
Activists say the community is divided by fear.
Very closeted, very afraid to come out. We're just, it's a very masculine-driven community. And so many of us are just so afraid that we're going to lose, especially those of us in the church communities. You know, we're so afraid. Of being rejected. Whether we agree it's okay or not, you know, we can still accept a community as a subculture that has needs and that can have the ability to love people and be sincere.
Organizers of Pride Fest say they
change the way many Americans view homosexuality.
Gays and lesbians
who want to change.
Gays and lesbians.
Homosexuality is not about sex. It's about relational
brokenness. Those are clips from past performances by Jason T. Ingram, who's here in the studio. Jason is creator of 12 Years of Fundy. That is a performance coming up on...
the 28th of this month.
Where will that be at?
That will be at Kairos United Church of Christ. And that's located at 4790 Southeast Logos Road, Logus Road. Please use a navigator. It's impossible to find. It's in Milwaukee. Again, that's 4790 Southeast Logos Road, and that's in Milwaukee, Oregon, just off of King. Not MLK. It's off of King. Okay, so that will be starting at 4:30. We're going to start with food, and we're going to have an art show, a presentation, a time for Q&A. And, of course, I always invite the fundamentalist type Christians to come and, you know, participate in things, but of course they never come. I'm kind of scared if they do come, but no, they never come. I've I've gotten more weird stuff from other gay people that don't understand what I'm doing. So I tell people, well, I'm an ex-gay survivor, and I've been through straight camp, and I've done this stuff, and I try to speak out against reparative therapy, and they look at me like, oh, that's like changing gays into straight. Oh, that doesn't work. That's stupid. I mean, why are you doing this? It's like, wait. You know, I am one who's... Never mind. So, anyways... that is the presentation that is on the calendar. If you just want to come and see the music and the talk and be a part of the discussion, you can come at 6 o'clock. And or if you don't like potluck food, like some people don't like. So I will give you some more contact information at the end of our segment here.
Wonderful. The studio number, if you'd like to call in and have a question or a comment for Jason, it's 503-231-8187. So earlier, you mentioned the protest that you'll be there, and other folks are welcome to join you. And that's in Happy Valley. That's the Restored Hope Network's national conference of ex-gay restorative therapy. Mm-hmm. When is that?
Okay, that's starting. Registration opens at 8 in the morning, and that's on Friday the 27th, so that's next week. And then that'll go until Saturday, up until about 5 or 6 that evening, which is just about the time that mine's starting, and it's only a couple miles apart as well. And the Restored Hope Network was founded in 2012 by Ann Polk here in Oregon, and they have really become the reincarnation of Exodus International. Okay, just in case you hadn't heard that, I believe that this anti-gay movement of trying to use, you know, harmful psychological tactics to change bi and lesbian and trans and gay people into heterosexual Christian people is centered in the Portland area. Let me let that sink in for a little bit, because I tell that to people and they're just like, it goes right over their head, because it's like, yes, you know, keeping Portland not so weird. So if you don't like this, come and show your love. And I'm not here to make enemies, to make any trouble or anything like that. Just be present. You know, I might have some balloons and some bottled water to give out here. I'm not here to scream and to make a scene or anything like that. I know that because I spent years with these people, I'd known them enough to know that they're just as loving as any other community. I could say that, yeah, they lack the wisdom of having moderation. They can be extreme in a lot of, you know, what they consider purity. They try to impose that on other people. We know that. They're also great as far as a lot of service organizations. The churches were really the only ones there for me when I was homeless, when I ended up in Anchorage 20 years ago. So I love these people. In fact, I'm just forever indebted to them, because as much harm they did, they've done a lot of good in my life. And I'm not here to make them miserable. I don't want to make life difficult for them. And yet, I don't like their ideologies. I don't like their doctrine, because it harmed me. It nearly made me take my life, and it ruined my life, basically. It's taken me years to get over that. It's taken me years and even more thousands of dollars of therapy. I don't know if I spent thousands, but I know I spent thousands on anti-gay therapy. So, anyways, let me give you some more contact information here. First off, I've got a fun thing I wanted to say. My mother, Julia Ingram, who's just awesome, she has just released a new book called Born Scared, and it's about birth trauma. And that is going to be, this is a totally separate thing, but I thought I'd give a plug for my mother, because of course, gay guys, we love our moms. So that is going to be in a half an hour. So go down to New Renaissance Bookstore at 1338 Northwest 23rd Avenue. The number there is 503-224-4929. And I think it's $12 to get in. But the book is amazing. It's available on Amazon. It's over there too. My mother, Julia Ingram and I did a CD together last year that we released about overcoming anxiety. I did the music, and she does self-hypnosis. And it's an awesome tool for anybody who deals with anxiety. So please come there tonight if you have some time. That would be awesome.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit about your performance, 12 Years of Fundy.
Okay. Well, first off, do you know what a Fundy is?
Well, a fundamentalist.
Well, good. it's kind of a newer term that a lot of people are getting used to. Like the word selfie, you know. It's 2014, and some people don't know what a selfie is. Some people don't know what a fundy is. Yeah, fundamentalist. It's a derogatory term. I'm sorry. I don't like to use things like that. Just as like I don't like to be called a fag. However, it just fit. You know, I watched the movie 12 Years a Slave. And thought my life was nothing like being a slave, but there was enough similarities of being trapped in something and feeling like I couldn't get out. And I spent 12 years in it. So I thought, what the heck? That'd be a fun title for a new show that I'm doing. I talked a little bit about why the ex-gay movement is so alluring, because they're not out there apparently to make gays miserable, like, you know, trying to spoil our basic rights and things like that. But it is a product of what I consider Bible culture. And when you're in Bible culture, there's a whole different set of rights and wrongs. Like in Portland culture, it's like really not cool to throw away pop cans. You know, when I got into Bible culture, I was like, wow, I can throw away a pop can without feeling guilty. But then again, I couldn't watch a Harry Potter movie without feeling guilty. So it's just like a whole different set of do's and don'ts. It took me until, 4 years ago to realize that I did have brainwashing because of all the sermons that I hear that are anti-gay. I mean, not even, you know, ex-gay ministries. It's just the pulpit, like that clip that I had from Pat Robertson. I mean, they're obsessed with us. And so many of them are gay, and that's why they're fighting us, is because they're fighting themselves, all that kind of stuff. So here's something that I'm doing that's new that you get to experience at my presentation. Is going to be me disproving their testimonies. Now, they give out all kinds of phony facts all the time because they say, oh, well, you know, same-sex relationships, they're always promiscuous and they don't last for more than a couple of weeks or so, and just like blah, blah, blah. And they just tell you all the, like, one ex-gay leader, he's like, I've never met a happy homosexual and stuff like that. Well, of course, because he's sneaking around in cruising spots, and they're not the happiest people there in the middle of the night. So anyways, I am a happy homosexual, and I love being out. I did Gay Pride Sunday, and oh my gosh, thank God that they let me ride in a car because I was too weak. I won't go into details, but I was too weak to march. I almost went home, and yay. So if you saw the guy with the big beard and the big long hair that looks like a middle-aged Jesus hippie with a big colorful hat, that was me. So I am going to give well over a dozen reasons why these so-called testimonies are not proving that people go from gay to straight. And I'll give you one for free. It's because many of them are bi, like me. Okay, we got one more song, speaking about coming out. This is a song called I'm Coming Out. And while the song is rolling, I'm going to talk a little bit about the song. So just go ahead and start that, and you can keep my microphone on at the same time. Thank you so much to our techie. You know, this whole studio looks so different. It's full of digital equipment. When I was here, we had knobs. It was analog knobs back then. And these knobs were the size of cup headphones. And so that's how much things have changed since I've been here. So this is a song called I'm Coming Out. It's inspired by a movie called I'm Coming Out. I did this song with a mandolin, flutes, clarinets, hand percussion, acoustic guitars, of course. And then I go in. This is the first new remix. I just remixed it today, so it's awesome. I have a music video that I have online with the old version of it that's up there. If you look up I'm Coming Out, Jason T. Ingram. And Yeah, I just love to show off because, I mean, that's what multi-instrumentalists do. It's like, yay, I can do everything, so I might as well. So, I will let you listen to a portion of this song, I'm Coming Out.
This is Alan with Out Loud today on KBOO. Thanks so much for that. That was a song by Jason T. Ingram, who is creator of the presentation 12 Years of Fundy, which is happening on
the 28th.
The 28th of this month at Kairos UCC in Milwaukee. You can find information about that on Facebook. Jason's site is
Facebook.com/Sunday Driver Productions. Sunday Driver Productions. Or you can just Google that with Jason T. Ingram, Portland. You should be able to find me, no problem. If you have a hard time with that, a good number to reach me usually is 503-484-3999. 484-3999. And I want to say I love you guys for listening, and sorry we didn't have a chance to go through the whole caller thing, but it sounds like I've answered everybody's questions that they have. And if you don't know what's going on, come to my presentation and support what we're doing.
Absolutely. And Jason's email again is gaypray@gmail.com. Jason, thanks so much for being here. The Restored Hope Network conference is coming up on the 27th and 28th, so it's great. Great for all of us. That you have created 12 Years of Fundy and that you're producing it that same weekend.
Woohoo! I couldn't miss this opportunity.
Great, Jason. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Alan.
The information on 12 Years of Fundy will also be on our own Facebook, KBOO Out Loud. So look for us there. Thanks so much. We're going to hear a little Mel and Kim and come back with some folks from the queer feminist sci-fi and fantasy book group here in Portland. I'm very excited to have these guests with us.
Going out.
This is Alan. Thanks for listening to Out Loud here on KBOO tonight. That was Mel and Kim back from the late 80s. Fashion icons, wonderful musicians, British ladies doing great stuff. Here I have we have our own Mel and Kim in the studio. We have Melinda Williams and Kim Schmucker, who are part of the feminist, queer, sci-fi, and fantasy book group in Portland. And I asked Melinda to be on the show. I have been waiting for a while to have you folks here, so I'm very excited. I've never attended the group, but it is an interest of mine, and I just think it's something great. So please introduce yourselves.
I'm Melinda. This group has existed for about 4 or 5-ish years, and it's been great. I really enjoy the different people that come in and share their perspectives. So, and we read so many different types of things. Not a lot of it's mainstream though. So,
yeah. Hi, and I'm Kim. I am friends with Melinda. We actually kind of met through book club.
Yes.
But yeah, I guess we're pretty good friends now. What do you want to know about us?
Well, it's a monthly book group, is that right?
Yes, we meet the third Wednesday of the month at In Other Words at 6:30, which means we're meeting tomorrow at 6:30. And just to put that plug out there, we are reading The Woman Who Thought She Was a Planet and Other Stories by Vandana Singh.
Do you have a book for next month picked out?
No, we are picking at this group the next maybe a couple of months, depending on people's interest in the titles we already have out, which what I do is I randomly, and it's not methodical anyway, I randomly just select books and I post them as a poll on Facebook and ask people to pick two.
They're from the list that we created, right? Too. So people can suggest books and we keep it democratic that way.
Right. Sure. So summer reading is coming up.
Summer reading.
Yeah.
Yes. I advocate for everyone participating in summer reading because there's lots to do. And I read all the time, but I don't actually participate in formal summer reading. But I don't know what the prize is at the library for the summer reading this go round. But if you have children, there are great prizes for the kids.
Yes.
But summer reading. What else? Well, I think I will pick on what I'm reading right now. What I will be reading. I'm currently reading book 2 of the Tankborn series by Karen Sandler. It's a YA book, but it's also deals with themes of genetically engineered humans and the caste system that was created around their creation.
And we read book 1 of that in the sci-fi group.
And book 2 is called, what is book 2 called? That's so, The Awakening. Awakening. Sorry, I'm about to start book 3, and so that title is in my head.
So there could be some parallels to some of Octavia Butler's writing in that series, do you think?
Octavia Butler is way better, in my opinion.
Well, Octavia Butler. No, said.
If you were voting in book club, I would definitely pick Octavia's books.
Yes, but you never picked Tankborn anyway.
I know I didn't.
Sorry, this is what we do. Octavia Butler. I don't know if I would say quite the same way. I like Octavia's work a lot, and I like Octavia Butler's work more, but I think that it's kind of the difference between a YA book and the audience intended for those books, and then, you know, Octavia Butler's books, for the most part, being intended for not necessarily a more mature audience, but not necessarily targeted at a specific group.
Sure.
She does deal with themes of race and... Sorry, my brain is just shutting down. It's like a microphone. She deals with themes of race and class, and I'm thinking more of her parable books, too, where she has the spiritual religious component. And Tankborn does have that, though. There's a faith based on. Mm. Yeah, so I could see some themes that might connect, but not necessarily.
Well, when I think of Octavia Butler, I do think about race and class, but I also think, what she was really getting at is what it means to be human. You know, mm-hmm. that's sort of, I think, what I feel like is really fundamental to what drives her storytelling. Which reminds me, it's speaking of humans from a different and kind of very different standpoint. I remember saying that you book group read Jewel Gomez. Is that right?
Oh, the Gilda stories. Yes, we did. I personally really love the Gilda stories. I like the different take on the vampire theme, which is funny because I'm not personally really into vampires. So when an author can take it and twist it a little bit, that there is sort of a symbiotic relationship going on, and that it's more than a feeding. It is a at least for me, I read it as an exchange of like consciousness and like, yeah, Gilda stories. Beautiful. Like, and especially since she loved women, Gilda did, and like having these journeys with these different women or meeting these different women through the course of her vampire long life. Yeah, beautiful.
The nice thing, I mean, the great thing about a book group like this is you can put your hands in so many different kinds of issues.
Yeah, we can. We've discussed kind of representations and imagery that are used. We've discussed the presence or absence of various groups, you know, the language that's used within the different books, even if it's something that is not specifically queer or maybe problematically feminist, because there are those books, you know, where you're it's going for one thing, but they kind of miss the point. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of discussions about that. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the book club meetings that we have are kind of us sitting there going, gosh, this book, oh, they did this thing. Oh, this is, why would they do this? It's the future. Haven't they learned better yet? You know, things like that.
And the why are we still talking about the same things? Can't we imagine a different future without these same issues? I thought we were moving forward.
Yes. We've had a lot of those discussions. Like, why? It's the post-apocalyptic and everybody died and everybody, like, but we did the exact same thing over again in a different context.
Which was the beauty of Octavia Butler. We recently read the Dawn, that series, and it was the same thing, that they had to recreate this world, and yet it was still like the hierarchy that was still happening in the fight for survival, but it was more, we're going to enslave women and like...
Yeah, and the gender roles of everybody had to be in a particular way, and like the men had to be extra manly and the women had to be docile, and you know, it was bizarre.
That's one of the opposite of that is one of the things that I think about when I watch Walking Dead. I mean, I love the zombies, but I always think the attraction of the show is that people don't, the only thing they care about is survival. They don't have to think about race. They don't have to think about gender. None of that comes into play. Either this person is trying to kill you or they're trying to work with you, and that's it. Like, that's mm-hmm. There's no meat on those bones on a show like that. And I think there's that sort of attraction, you know, where people can sort of escape what's real, and all they have to worry about is, oh my God, you know, dead or alive. Like, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that about why. I don't think that's a reason to recommend Walking Dead.
Because even if the characters don't have to be concerned about that, the producers and everybody involved with it really should.
Right. It's like you want those issues brought into things. I recently went to WisCon, WisCon 38, which is feminist sci-fi convention that they do in Madison, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And it was some of the discussions that came up were really interesting around, there was talk, I mean, some of what they talked about was more television shows in addition to novels and stuff, but some of the panels I went to really focused on TV shows. And, one of the things that I personally would like to see done more fluidly, if you will, is more queer characters in shows. Just sometimes they're there, but they're peripheral, or so-and-so has a relationship and we don't really talk about it. And or I'd like to see, like, for me, Gina Torres. Let's have Gina Torres go there. But no, there's no Xena for Gina Torres. Sorry, that's my...
There's a Samuel Delaney review of the first Star Wars movie, 1977, he wrote it. That's been going around on the internet quite a bit lately. Somebody dug it out and they scanned the article. And he says in it, you know, these folks, all the background characters, other than the ones that are non-human, they're white. And, you know, they give folks, the producers could have slipped in folks of any color into those slots, but they chose white people pretty consistently in making that movie. Why is that? You know, here's Samuel Delaney, you know, almost 40 years ago asking this question. And has that changed?
You know, for the most part, I feel like no. There are some shows that I feel like weren't intended to survive their first season where I've been told that they're doing that more. Like one of the shows that people kept talking about at WisCon was Sleepy Hollow. I don't know much about Sleepy Hollow because I personally viewed it as being a horror-based show. And, you know, the what's his name from the Lord of the Rings, Gollum, the My Precious, gave me nightmares. So I couldn't watch Sleepy Hollow. But one of the things they talk about is that you do have more of a mix of characters of color. You have a little more queer characters going on. And it's just like, it was considered one of those shows that wouldn't do it, but they're in season two or three.
But that one also was still very focused around the story of the white male Ichabod. Right. I mean, there might have been a lot of characters supporting and whatever, but the thread of that story was following the story of Ichabod. So even if they were better in the representation of supporting cast, like the focus and the center and the heart of that story was still very much white male.
Well, and see, this brings me to, you know, random True Blood. I stopped watching True Blood because I personally, like the characters I was interested in were the peripheral ones, like Lafayette and his cousin. Like, I really was interested in them, and Sam I was interested in a little bit, you know, and they are not the focus, but for me they were the most interesting characters. But here we have Suki and her vampire, and I refuse to watch shows like that anymore where folks are like, no season 5, 8, 20 it gets better. It's like, no, it doesn't.
Well, and it's interesting that with something like sci-fi and fantasy, where like the world and the creative landscape is open for like anything that you want it to be.
Any world you can imagine,
any bodies you can imagine, any people you can imagine, any not even human, but like any form. And still, like, we try to like force everything into kind of like a binary identity of, you know, male or female with like specific gender roles for each. Mm-hmm. Or we try to, you know, even if a character is queer, like they're still sort of cis queer or something, you know. And so it's kind of a, like, why is there not more of that creativity in some of these things, even today? It's interesting for me.
Indeed. My reading passion is Samuel Delaney. Mm. And, I, you know, you folks read Babel 17, Empire Star. Mm-hmm. I think I voted for that in the Facebook poll. And he's, you know, he's in his mid-70s and still publishing. The last book was sort of, you know, it was something like 800 pages and very pornographic, and that was his, you know, that was his thing. But he really wants to talk about race and gender, and he's super intelligent, so he's got a lot of, you know, a lot of thought that he's put into it. One of the things he wrote that you reminded me of was Triton, where, you know, it was a world in which you could change your gender, just step into this office, and you could change your body's sex, and then you had to figure out, you had to figure out whether your gender was going to meet that. And so this person, pretty unlikable person, struggles with, you know, is this the answer to his problems in his life? So the feminist sci-fi, the feminist and queer sci-fi and fantasy book club meets once a month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, third Wednesday of the month at 6:30, and in other words, which is at 14 Northeast Killingsworth. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Yes.
I'm so used to going there that I don't remember exact address. Sure. And yes, you're always welcome to join. We do not require people to have read, so if you want to come and sample us first before